In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's podcast. Coming up on the show, we'll be hearing from ruminant business manager with Glanbia, Niamh Bambrick, and 20 years since foot and mouth on the Cooley Peninsula. We'll hear from one farmer on how sheep farming survived that pandemic. But first, with lockdown restrictions continuing, our pedigree correspondent Shane Murphy was in the marts last week to find out the implication on sales. He spoke to Irish Charolais Secretary Nevin McKiernan on the mart restrictions for pedigree sales.
Joining with Nevin McKiernan just after finishing the first sale year. I suppose it started off well, a small bit of leg, but finished off well enough.
Yeah, no, look, the trade for the top end of the bulls was very good. When you got to the middle third of the bulls, it faded away, and the bottom end of the bulls was, look, it was a poor trade.
And just, I suppose, it's the first sale where we've seen the new restrictions for level 5 in place, and all exhibitors were asked to leave early on in the morning. How did that fare out for you?
Yeah, no, I think it really impacted the trade. It didn't help it at all. A lot of them top bulls went to the UK. Buyers, maybe they didn't see them, had people here looking at the bulls for them. If we didn't have them, it would have been an absolute flop. And the reason being, buyers couldn't view the bulls when the exhibitors wasn't there because there's no one to lead out a bull for them. We cannot run a pedigree sale under these restrictions. I'm calling on the Department of Agriculture and the Minister to make the relevant changes to allow pedigree bull sales to go ahead this spring in a realistic and practical manner, because they are not realistic with the restrictions in place at the minute.
I suppose we're looking at the sale here. There's only 60 bulls here. Down in Tullamore Mart, set up probably better than some of the rest of them. If it goes to bigger sales where you run more than one ring, it's nearly impossible.
It's nearly impossible, and it shouldn't be impossible, because there's a process that can put in place here that will be a safe for everyone with COVID and everything, but that is not the way it is at the minute. What's been asked of us at the minute is impossible. There is no reason why one person per exhibitor cannot stay with their animals at all times and keep a social distance, keep 2 metres apart. There is no reason why that can't take place. And it has to happen, because what we're going to see is bad trades across the board. And it's a health and safety hazard, because if you're leaving a man's cattle unattended for 3 hours and buyers going in around them, that's a danger to man, beast and buyer. It's a danger to everyone.
And just when the sale started in, I suppose you're only allowed 6 people in the market itself. How did that work for bringing in bulls?
Up and down. It was chaotic. Chaotic, that's what it was, and it's just not practical, it's just not workable. I have said this all along, and again, I'll stress, I'm calling on the Department of Agriculture to sit down with the breed societies and maybe the relevant marts that's running pedigree sales this spring and work out a practical solution. They're an essential part of the breeding season.
And I suppose this is your first of 5 sales, and it's the kick and start. I suppose we've 2 heavy months of sales nearly every week from here on. Yeah. It's the main income period for pedigree farmers, so it has a serious impact going forward.
Yeah, we have to cater for them, and there's no reason why we can't put a system in place that's workable for all marts, for all breed societies, for breeders to get the bulls sold and for buyers to be able to identify the bulls they want. It was next to impossible out there today. If I was buying a bull there today, I couldn't see him walking out. I personally had to lead out bulls for buyers. That's ridiculous.
Shane also spoke with the head of health and safety with FRS, Jim Dockery.
Joined here with Jim Dockery, head of health and safety in FRS. Just you were leading campaign down in the yards today. I suppose all the exhibitors are out since 9:30. How did that work?
Sure, looking okay. It's very different because I suppose it's something that hasn't been used to and probably hadn't been told in advance. And like farmers, for the most part, will comply with safety, but they need to know in advance. And they didn't know in advance of today's sale. That's very hard on them. And, you know, they get irate then. So it wasn't too bad until they wanted to come back in today. And when all the potential buyers had finished in the yard, the farmers in were only let in, or the owners and breeders in were only let in sixes at a time. And it didn't give them enough time to prepare their animals, and particularly if they had two or three animals. And they were very frustrated, so we got a lot of hassle then in the air. And I suppose to take it out on us then, that's a department rule or whatever, to take it out on us, because they didn't know about it in time. If they knew in advance, as I said already, then they would be prepared for it.
And just down the yard, I suppose the exhibitors were without their bulls for 3 hours. Does that lead itself to a bit of a health and safety concern for the buyers going in?
It does. Two things. One is a safety risk, because it's in the first instance, bulls are lying down. Where the bulls are lying down, it means either the buyer or some of the staff, stewards on duty, has to stand the bull up, because you can't see a bull lying down. And in some cases, in good few cases, the bull had to be walked out, so they wanted to see the bull walking. So it meant that some of the stewards had to take somebody else's bull out, and that's grossly unsafe. Because you don't know, bulls are after coming a long journey this morning, and you take a bull out and walk them up and down, you don't know, through other people. So it's grossly unsafe there without the owner present. I suppose the other side of it then was when they were out for so long, there was no water, fresh bed, cleaning up. And that's the thing. Like, these farmers are breeding bulls for the last 12 to 18 months for this sale, and some of them valued 6,000-7,000, as you see today. You know, and all they want is a chance to prepare them and look the best as possible. So they need to be refreshed up throughout, particularly when there's buyers there from all around the country looking at them.
And just, this is the first breed society sale, I suppose, in a busy 3 months where the majority of income is taken from pedigree breeders, make the majority of their income. What do you recommend that should be done or can be done?
I think there needs to be a meeting with all the stakeholders and clarify what the rules are going to be. You see, marts are different. Different marts have different facilities, and some don't have the same pinning system there. And one rule doesn't suit all. But you need to have, you know, broad parameters, and it needs to be agreed well in advance. And if a rule has been brought in, it needs to be signalled weeks and weeks in advance, so that the breeders will know what to expect. Like today, we had instances where the farmers didn't know until 12:30 that they weren't allowed back in. And that frustrates people. So whatever, I think all the stakeholders, and, you know, I work on safety. A lot of the meetings are held and there's no element of safety discussed at it. And that's crucially important, because we're at the front of that all the time. We're trying to keep people safe and also COVID compliant. So we understand we're in a pandemic, but we can manage it once there's a meeting and what's agreed. We need to agree parameters around it in, and that didn't happen today.
Well, it is 20 years since the outbreak of foot and mouth in the Coolie Peninsula. For most of us, it was a time of mats, disinfectant, cancelled matches and horrific scenes on newsreels from England. But for the farmers of Coolie and County Louth, they experienced those horrors firsthand with mass culling of their flocks after one positive case. We spoke to sheep farmer John Wirrell about his experience.
John Wirrell, I'm sheep farmer here in Ravensdale in County Louth on the Coolie Peninsula. This time 20 years ago, we were culled due to the foot and mouth outbreak in Perleek, which is just a short field away from us here. We were one of the first flocks to be culled after the initial outbreak. A lot of our sheep were slaughtered here on farm at the time of the cull. It took us a long time to restock. We bought sheep from Donegal, Mayo, Waterford, all parts of the country. Our biggest problem was trying to get the sheep to settle on the hills here behind us. Our ewes are all on commonage. To get them settled was a massive job. It took years of hard work, but we're getting there now bit by bit. I suppose the best thing that came out of the cull was we formed a group 10 years ago, the Coolie Sheep Breeders, and what we did was we kind of used the same exclusion zone that was used to time the foot and mouth, so we set up a group within the Coolie Peninsula to market our breeding sheep. And we have a very successful sale in Carniford in County Louth on the first Saturday of September. And it's turned out to be one of the best breeding sales in the country. Yeah, after the foot and mouth, I suppose the whole thing was maybe split up a wee bit. And we talked about forming something, and a bunch of us got together. And I suppose one man in particular was Ian Woods. He's an auctioneer out in Carniford, and he gives us his field every year to use for the sale. But there originally was 10 of us on the committee, but there's 15 now. But there's 70 farmers, nearly all on the commonage. We got together, and there's a lot of young lads involved that don't even really remember the foot and mouth, and older men in their 70s and 80s as well. So we've a good mix of wealth and knowledge. But the sale's going really well. I say we were one of the first to be culled here, and it was devastating to think there was no sheep in the whole peninsula. I was one of the first maybe to get back into sheep, and I bought a few pedigree Texel sheep at the Texel Premier Sale in Maynooth, and then went on to buy sheep at different sales all around the country. I suppose on a positive note, all the hard work for the last 20 years of buying and culling has paid off, because we have a fantastic sale in Carniford, and it's really paying off. And I suppose the outlook is good. The sheep trade was never as good at the minute, and I suppose the prospects for next year for breeding females looks to be good as well.
There is more on that story in the paper. Stay tuned, because we'll be back just after this.
€400 per hectare for rush control. For more in your Farmer's Journal, here's Paul Mooney.
We look at government proposals for designated land, which also include a €490 payment for cutting back in fertiliser. Hedgerows and €10,000 payments sought in new reps. What are the tax implications of not getting a green cert? And 20 years on, we look back at the devastation caused by foot and mouth.
Plus, don't miss our spring animal health focus inside this week's Irish Farmer's Journal, on sale now.
Now, many of you will be aware, or I hope you're aware, that Irish Country Living has its very own podcast now, run by my fellow Limerick native, Anne O'Donoghue. This week, she spoke to Niamh Bambrick, ruminant manager with Glanbia, who discussed her career path into agriculture.
And did you join Glanbia straight out of college, Niamh?
I did. So I graduated in 2016. I did in UCD. So I went straight into Glanbia onto the graduate programme. So I did the graduate programme. I was actually only a few months, and one of the tillage managers left. So I took over then as being tillage business manager pretty quick, actually January 17. Now I still remained, you could say, on the graduate programme, but I basically became a full-time business manager. And then in a year later, so 2018, then I switched over to being ruminant business manager. So I went down to South Wexford. So it was a tough enough kind of area to start off in, but it was good, like, if there's a good resilience and everything in me. So I was probably about a year down in South Wexford, and then probably in 2019, then I came back home up to Kilkenny. So now I'm based in Kilkenny, so it's actually, yeah, so it's great. Like, I'm based all around home, so it's great.
And when you were in school, Niamh, did you know that you wanted to study ag?
No. Not at all. Absolutely no way. I always had my heart set on veterinary, actually. Then I did, in fourth year, I did placement in a large veterinary practice and a small veterinary practice. The small wasn't really for me. I was just more interested in the larger animals, I suppose. But then I did the large, and then I seen, you know, out doing cesareans and getting up in the middle of the night, and I said, oh, here, I don't know, that's not for me. So then actually I changed my mind towards, I got big into sports, and I was changing my mind towards physio. And that was definitely where I was going. I even had secured a place, let's say, in Robert Gordon in Aberdeen, just in case I didn't get the points, let's say, in Ireland for physio. But then actually, in the meantime, my sister joined, did ag science. So she would have been 2 years ahead of me, and she started ag science, and she loved it. And I started looking into it. So actually, I would say it was probably the month, I would say, before I had to fill in my CAO is the time that I changed my my first preference to being, let's say, you know, to go down the agriculture side. So yeah, it's gas, like, no, I was definitely flipping and turning and everything. And even, honest to God, like, even getting the CAO results and going in, I don't even know if I was sure I knew what I wanted to do. But then once I went in, I absolutely loved ag science in Dublin. Yeah, I loved it.
So you're glad you picked it anyway in the end.
Oh, definitely, like, it was the best 4 years of my life, definitely, without a shadow of a doubt. Like, it was, the crack was brilliant. The lectures were great in UCD. Like, you know, it was like a home from home. It was one tight knit community. So like I lived in on campus, so it was great. Like, and she then, I was big into the Camogie. I got a Camogie scholarship as well, like to UCD. So it was great. Like, yeah, so it was brilliant. Literally like just home away from home, like, you know.
And do, as a career in ag, would you say, does it give you good options?
Totally. Like, there's huge options. Like, I know even a lot of my year, like, who wouldn't even be necessarily working as such in, you know, the ag industry, some would have went on and did their HDIP and they're now teachers. I know an awful lot actually in my year have gone on to be accountants. Some are working in the bank, some are gone home farming. There's so many, you know, options. Some went back and did veterinary, let's say, after doing ag. So there's so many options, you know, that not necessarily, I definitely think like the ag science degree is a degree that could take you anywhere and you can use to go anywhere. So I think it's a fantastic course definitely to have.
And that full podcast is available from Irish Country Living. Back to number crunching now. Here is beef editor Adam Woods and Declan Maron discussing the latest results from Thrive.
Okay, I'm joined now by Declan Maron, our Thrive program manager. Declan, you've got a really interesting piece in this week's paper around, I guess, the profitability of the Thrive system. And you've looked at the different breeds and the different sires in terms of gross margin per day on the farm. Tell me a little bit about the systems employed on the Thrive demonstration farm in Cashel, first of all, just to give our listeners a picture of what's going on down there.
Yeah, Adam. So all calves on the Thrive demonstration farm are AI sired from high dairy beef index bulls. So we're looking for a minimum beef value there of 50 euro and we're looking for a positive carcass weight. We're running Angus, Hereford, Limousin and Belgian blue sired calves. And the system we're running is a 19 to 20 month system, trying to get as many cattle slaughtered off grass at the end of the second grazing season. This year we had about 60% of the heifers and almost 40% of the steers slaughtered from grass. So when you look at the complete diet, and with this in this week's paper, you know, over 90% or almost 90% of the diet is coming from either grazed grass or grass silage. So, you know, it's showing that we're performing fairly well and things have been done right. Meal for the heifers makes up just 11% of the diet. This is on a dry matter basis, and for the bullocks it's 14%. So we're getting good performance, we're doing everything right. But when you look at the financials of it, you know, you're getting a gross margin there of 319 euro on average for the heifers, 368 euro for the bullocks. Then we
that's gross margin. Tell me what's included in that. So you start off with your sale price minus the deductions in a factory or haulage or whatever. Then you take off, what are you taking off to get your gross margin per head then off that we'll say sale value?
Yeah, so our gross margin is the value of our carcass that we're selling less the price of the calf, the cost of rearing it in terms of milk replacer, meal, any bedding cost like that. Then the cost of grazing for the two seasons, meal for the first winter, silage for the first winter, meal for the finishing period, and if they're rehoused, silage for the finishing period, vet costs, haulage, and kill charges.
So that takes you to gross margin, and then I know you have a sort of an average figure there built in of somewhere between 280 and 320. That takes off your fixed costs. So really, when you do that, and I'm thinking here that you're after saying everything's been done really, really well on this farm, but when you take off your fixed costs, you're not left with an awful lot at the end of this.
Definitely no. Like, depending on your own system, we valued in there 100 euro per head on labour, and we're working at a land rent of 140 euro per acre. Now you can fix that up and down depending on where you are in the country and what value you place on your own land. But we have included it because it is a cost there in the system, and then your fixed cost is well on top of that. Once you take off that, Adam, there's not a whole lot left. You know, you're talking an average gross margin of around the 330 mark, and then your fixed costs are coming in at around the 280 to 320 mark. So we're struggling to leave a positive margin, even though we're working with the best calves out there possible. We're doing everything right. We're the young slaughter age, and we're probably slaughtering 10 to 15 kilos heavier than the national average at the same slaughter age.
Just finally, Declan, in terms of looking at, I guess, what system is